All right, welcome everybody into another edition of the Salt City Hoops podcast. My name is Andy Larson. I am back from Brazil. Thank goodness.
Back from Brazil.
Don't get me wrong. It was a wonderful time. But that being said, I just think I'm happy to be back for the Jazz and free agency time, and really what's the most exciting time of the offseason. So, again, my name is Andy Larson. I'm here along with Ben Dowsett, the extraordinaire. I'm just going to shorten it to extraordinaire, yep. And then I won't have to call you writer, editor, or anything.
I have no issues with this.
We have a lot in the Jazz world to talk about, especially free agency this week. So Gordon Hayward, there's a lot of news to discuss with him. Yesterday it was rumored and then reported by Adrian Wojnarowski that the Cavaliers were going to or were at least seriously looking at extending a maximum offer to Gordon Hayward. Then it seems like sources around the NBA, including Sam Amico from, I believe, Fox Sports Ohio, mm-hmm. kind of rolled back on that and saying, you know, maybe not so fast on that. Maybe that was a report coming out of Mark Bartlestein's camp, the agent for Gordon Hayward. So I do want to at least look at, though, because I think some team will offer him max money, regardless of whether it's Cleveland, if it's Phoenix, whether it's, I think, even Orlando might be a possibility. And, of course, the Boston Celtics with the Brad Stevens connection. So I want to look at, A, whether or not that's reasonable in my opinion. And then, B, I want to kind of look at the philosophy of building a team. You know, at what point is it okay to, say, make an overpayment for a maximum player? Do you give a guy like Gordon Hayward, who's, you know, we've learned this season is not a number one franchise guy, max money? Can you afford to do that as you try to build a contending team? So I've put a lot on our plate, and while I go ahead and lay out the show, I should also point out that Jacob Rosen from Wait for Next Year, which is a Cleveland fan blog, which a perfect name for any Cleveland Cavaliers.
A tradition of hope, passion, and misery. That's the byline on the site. It's great.
Yeah, so that's the kind of person we'll be talking to. He also is a staff member at the Sports Analytics blog, and I've met him at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference this year. So
very smart guy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to him. That'll be in about 12 minutes. So, Ben, I do want to get your opinion. First of all, is Gordon Hayward worth a maximum contract?
Well, and my answer in a vacuum, which I love that phrase, is yes.
Yes? In a vacuum, completely out.
Given the state of what I believe is the current state of
that's
the
not
NBA,
a vacuum.
Well,
in
a non-team context, I think is the way I meant it, and in a specific Jazz team context, also I believe yes. And we of course should qualify that with the reminder that plenty of folks needed to show yesterday, which is true, is that when we say max, people do have to realize that there are different levels of the max. With Gordon Hayward just coming off of his rookie deal, he can't get the same max that LeBron or Carmelo Anthony can.
Yeah, he's not going to be paid the Kobe level. Right?
Yeah. We're not talking about eating more than a third of his team's cap in one shot. Now we are talking about roughly about a $15 million a year type of deal, slightly more. I think it's like 4 years, 63. I think is the max roughly that he can be offered. Now, and we're going to get into fairly deeply potentially into some more macro level stuff in terms of team building and in terms of roster construction and payroll and probably things like the CBA advancing in the next couple years. And these of course play into this type of thing. But in general, yes, I think that, of course, you have to know that in a market like Utah and in really any non-major market, you're going to have to pay a small premium a small premium above their real worth to keep the players that are good on your team. And I don't believe that last year is the way Hayward performed last year is going to be the standard for his career. I really believe there were several areas in which he was badly utilized and overused. I really think that in a new system with a new coach who's, I think, going to be a lot more friendly to his style of game and a lot of the Jazz ball handler style of game in general, with some more young talent coming in and very potentially a return to the type of role that I think is more correct for him, which is not as the primary creator of an offense, but as a secondary option there who can also do a lot of other things, very well. Maybe not on an elite level. That's something folks like to bring up, but he does plenty of things very well and also was a 40% three-point shooter a couple of years ago, which I think he should absolutely be getting back to. I do think it's worth it as a starter.
So you're thinking if he puts it all together, if he puts together the kind of the efficiency from last season and I guess the cumulative numbers from this season, that he's worth the $15 million, right?
I think so. Yeah,
I just don't see how he does that if he's not the number one guy. And if he's the number one guy, then is he able to raise that efficiency back to the level that it was 2 years ago?
I don't know that. I mean, we talk about number one guy and first options and things like that, and I don't know that the team construct that the Jazz are going for in the future. And I wrote some about this yesterday in a piece I did on Dante Exum. It was more general, the talking that I was doing in that piece, but I think that for a team like the Jazz, they've got a Favors that they've already signed for just over 12 a year. That's, again, that's not superstar money, but that's definitely not role player money.
Right.
There are going to be a couple of guys in the next couple. You know, we're not sure what they're going to do with Alec Burks this year. We're going to have Trey Burke in another year or two. We're not sure what's going to happen there. And then, you know, down the line a few years, we may even have a Dante Exum if he's a performer. And I'm not sure that the Jazz are necessarily building the type of team where they have to have a number one option. I really believe that the Jazz are looking for a very, very Spursian type of trajectory for the franchise here, where they're building a wing rotation, as I mentioned in my piece yesterday, that is extremely flexible, pieces that can come out and be replaced, that based on matchups, based on favorable things that Quinn Snyder is looking at. And I just think that's more of the type of team construct than needing to define a specific player role based on how much they're getting paid. I understand, of course, that cap issues are a concern with these types of things, but I've looked at the math even over the next couple of years, and the Jazz will absolutely have the money. Like, let's say they match a max offer for Hayward, and then a couple other guys make big leaps, like either Burke or Burks or Exum has a huge leap in the next few years, and they need to pay that person real money. They're not only going to have the room to do that, but given the right little moves that they make with some of their smaller salary, they could easily have the room for that plus larger, a medium max style salary within the next couple of years.
Even if they give big extensions to Alec Burks and Enes Kanter?
It would depend on how much exactly they gave to both those guys. I mean, they can't give eight figures a year to both those guys, but I don't think that's a realistic possibility anyway, them giving, a large salary to both. I think they're probably picking one. I don't know if that's a general.
Well, so then I guess that's my point, is that if you have a maximum deal for Hayward, then I think you kind of have to choose one of Burke, Burks, or Kanter when their free agency extensions come up, or free agency or extensions or what have you. I mean, I just don't think that you can give them the kind of money that they're going to demand, especially as we look at like Jody Meek's kind of $7 million a year kind of contract.
Yeah,
Alec Burks is worth 10 in that world, right?
I guess those types of Jody Meeks things always just make me cringe from that exact type of standpoint,
right?
That in a couple of years we're going to be looking to re-sign some wing players that almost certainly are at least as valuable as him, and it's like, that guy's really worth $7 million. I don't know. And I'm the guy who was just talking about how you do need to pay a bit of an inflation fee, which you do, but first of all, I'm not sure what my opinions would be of if they had to make a choice between those three, or maybe two of those three. I do think there's a chance, at least, that first of all, I think Alec Burks, of course, to me, he's very undervalued. I really think that there's a chance that the general market values him less than the Jazz do.
Well, okay, but is there anyone in the world who thinks Jody Meeks is a better player than Alec Burks?
No.
Besides the Laker fan crazies.
I guess he was able to fill up a lot of stats last year, and he was a better three-point shooter, but
no. So, again, I think Alec Burks gets 10 in this world. If Alec Burks is a free agent this year instead of next year, he gets 10, right? I mean, and then you look at maybe the cap building and stuff like that. If he's a free agent next season, I don't see why salaries would decrease from next offseason.
Yeah,
off.
Well, and you did mention one thing that I do find important, and that's that the cap is expected to rise, to increase greatly,
right,
over the next, very likely within 2 years, when the new TV deal is going to be in 2016, the summer, I believe.
Well, in 2 years, right? So
yeah.
In 2016 is when the contract is renegotiated,
yeah.
So that means that the big rise won't happen for at least another two more seasons.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is, in the meantime, next year you have Alec Burks and Enes Kanter as restricted free agents, and I don't think you have to make a decision on Trey Burke until the next season,
no,
as far as an extension. But as far as those two guys, you have to kind of figure out who you're gonna ride, right? Who,
mm-hmm,
you're gonna go with, and so I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here a little bit. But I think if I were in charge of the Jazz, I would match a max deal.
Yeah.
I would, because ultimately I think you can't lose a player like Hayward for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's a little bit of an overpay, we've learned in this free agency period that no matter what, you're going to be ending up overpaying somebody.
Yeah.
Might as well be someone at a max level rather than a Jody Meeks or Ben Gordon type. That being said, the other reason why I'm comfortable with it, even though it kind of does mean that you have to choose one of Burke, Cantor, or Burks, is that ultimately I don't think that it's very likely that all three of those guys end up better than Gordon Hayward would be.
Yeah, if more than one of them ends up better than Gordon Hayward, that it would be surprising, right?
Right.
And we get to a point as well where this is something that we've been discussing a lot recently, and not just you and I, but in general in the Jazz world, is that at some point the number of young assets that you have is going to trim. At some point when you've got, what, like 8 young assets right now, they're not eventually, if they all pan out or if a few of them are decent, a few of them are also going to have to go. Because when you get to the point where it doesn't work salary wise, that's just what happens. And I think the Jazz we're not at that point yet, but they're within a couple seasons, assuming some good play from guys who are up for extensions in the next few years, then that is going to be a reality that the Jazz are going to have to face at some point, especially if they want, you know, if they really do reach contender status within a year or two here and they want to bring in the typical type of veteran presences that you want to have on the, you know, on a roster that is really trying to compete for things, which the Jazz don't really have a whole lot of that currently rostered right now. They'll probably bring in a couple of veterans before the summer's over, but were they to be a contending Western Conference playoff team, those types of pieces become pretty important.
Right. But, I mean, I think we both agree that's not happening next season.
No,
right?
Absolutely not.
You know, you kind of have to put that in when it makes sense.
Exactly.
And in the meantime, it probably makes sense to roll the dice on these young guys and see which of them can become things and which of them are worth moving on.
Yeah, and, you know, for the time being, the Jazz are clearly comfortable enough to match a max offer for Hayward. They're going to have still a lot of room going into next year. They could make several more moves this summer after doing so if they wanted to. And there are the potentials down the road for things to start becoming a little bit clogged. But again, I just think the overall value of, and with, you know, projecting a salary cap that may get as high as $80 million in a few years with the new rights deal and everything like that, to where 15 might not seem as huge of a deal. And realistically, is this Jazz team really looking to be a Western Conference contender in either of the next two seasons? I mean, I can't read a crystal ball, but very likely not this year. I suppose the year after that, if everybody comes along pretty well and they make a good signing or two, it could absolutely be possible.
I think they'd want to be in the playoffs. I don't know about a contender, you know, at the Oklahoma City, San Antonio level.
I think the time for that, realistically, is hopefully in those last couple of years of Hayward's contract, depending on if they give him 4 years or if the Jazz maybe decide to tender their own type of offer and give him 5. Those back years are going to be the ones where the Jazz are potentially really looking to maximize on this core that they've built themselves over the last few years. And if that's the case, and if the cap in those years is projected to be something close to 80, which is, you know, like 15 to 17 million more than it's going to be this year, that's a huge difference to where a 15 a year player like Hayward, if he performs at the level that I think is honestly pretty realistic for him, that it's a slight overpay. But again, to keep your stars in a small or your good players, at least in a market like this, I think it's a necessary evil.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at the other options out there, although I kind of like the Lance Stephenson one. I want to talk with you about that later. But right now, Jacob Rosen is on the phone. Jacob, are you there?
Hi there.
Hi there. So Jacob, we'll reintroduce him, is writes for Wait for Next Year, the Cleveland General fan blog, right? You guys cover the Cavs and the Browns and everything else, right?
Yeah.
And then Sports Analytics blog is how I best know your work, is you kind of go around and look around the interwebs for various sports analytics content in basketball and other fields. And you and I have actually met at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference as well. So.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I wanted to get your perspective, especially because you are a Cleveland guy and because so much has been happening with the Jazz and Cleveland recently. In particular, how likely do you think it is that Cleveland does end up making an offer to Gordon Hayward?
At this point in time, you know, we're not really sure. The LeBron thing still is in limbo. Other pieces could fall. If you asked me that question about noon yesterday, I would have said, you know, 90%. Now I'd probably say closer to 40%. We're just not really sure what the Cavs might be up to. You never know what the Cavs are doing. And the Hayward offer sheet, to me, does make sense, but it's just I don't really know what the Cavs' plan is. And There would be other moves that they would have to make if they do sign Hayward or if they do sign LeBron. So just lots of pieces in limbo at the moment.
Is it just me, or is like the Cavs front office in like this weird relationship with the media in which they kind of float their any ideas that come over the top of their head that like, and of course then these get endlessly reported, like the favors plus the number five for the number one deal, and you know, it seems like Cleveland's been in the news more than any other NBA team over the last 3 weeks, and nearly none of it has actually come to fruition.
Oh yeah, the number one pick helps with that, obviously.
Right, right.
In the case, three of the last 4 years, though, they have happened to be in the news a lot in May and June and July for all the wrong reasons. But there was a weird thing where David Griffin, the Cavs GM, went out and called out the media several times for reporting erroneous rumors of things that were never even on the table. You don't know if maybe that's Gilbert or Griffin or agents or anything like that throwing that out there. It's just all silly season. The Cavs are always the ones that are getting made fun of in the national media. So you don't really know what's going to happen next with them. Again, Hayward would be a good fit for them, I think. You have no idea who else they might be interested in the free agent market right now.
So when you look at the analytics of Gordon Hayward, and do you think he is worth that maximum offer?
Technically, no. Restricted free agents, if they're not going to be matched the offer sheets, are hardly ever worth what they're being paid. But you know that in terms of free agency and restricted free agency. You also know that he's a 24-year-old, so you're not paying him for what he did as a 22- or 23-year-old. You're paying him for what he would do as a 26- and 27-year-old. So I don't think he's worth it right now, but I think if the Cavs do believe he's a good fit and do believe he's a productive player of what they have, then sure, it makes sense to overpay because that's just how free agency works.
Yeah, that's obviously an important thing that people have to consider, that I think some folks who are only really thinking on the first level really aren't thinking that way. Of course, you're not paying for the last few years when you're signing a guy to a 4 or 5 year deal. You're paying for the next few years. And Jacob, you actually did a piece earlier in June on waiting for next year about free agency and analyzing from an analytics point of view some of the top available wings potentially in free agency. Now, it's uncertain that the guys you looked at were Trevor Ariza, Rudy Gay. You looked at Hayward, you looked at Chandler Parsons, and also PJ Tucker. Now, it's unsure at this point. That was on June 6th, so it's been nearly a month since then, and some of those, of course, might not be possible for various reasons. But do you want to just give like a little bit of an overview? How did Hayward stack up against some of these other wings that are available on the market, as from a Cleveland perspective or in a vacuum? What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Rudy Gay obviously opted into his deal for next season for $19 million in Sacramento. So he's not on the market. And PJ Tucker was a guy I've always been interested in. So he's not really on the same scale as the others. But for me, where Hayward kind of compared was that he's a young guy who's had increasing usage throughout his career. He kind of actually, I know Rudy Gay has this negative stereotype about him, but he kind of reminds me a little bit of Rudy Gay. When Gay was young and playing in Memphis, he had low usage and he was an up-and-coming star. And that was the case with Hayward as well, a little bit. You know, his first couple of years, how well he shot the three-point ball and things like that. And then this past season, obviously, Hayward had a much larger role in Utah. He had his usage go up tremendously. He was his shots were very often unassisted. So you really can't compare the stats from Hayward's first three seasons to his last year. It's a completely different role in the system. And so one of the guys I'd like to point out Hayward to, especially compared to Cavs fans, is Chandler Parsons.
Mm-hmm.
Parsons has had a 3/4 option kind of role throughout his career in Houston, and he's never, ever come close to the kind of usage and creation that Hayward had last season. So we know more about Hayward because we know what he did last year. He obviously wasn't that efficient shooting the ball, but we don't know what Chandler Parsons might do in such a role. He might be even worse. What we do know is that Hayward was a better shooter in the complementary role, and we do know that Hayward has that experience at all. So Hayward also is a year and a half younger. So those are kind of the key points that I made. We know less about Chandler Parsons, and so we don't know how at all he might do if he takes on a larger role long term, and we know that there's a little bit less projection when he's also older too.
So if you were making an offer, if you were obviously from a Cavs point of view, you're saying you'd in general you'd be looking at a Hayward type first, especially given that in Cleveland he will very likely have that sort of complementary role with Kyrie Irving just signing a large extension and with Andrew Wiggins at least expected to be a very impactful player within a few years?
Yeah, I think the Cavs for Hayward, you're obviously at this point in time making it with Hayward. If you're giving Hayward an offer sheet, you're banking on getting rid of Deion Waiters, just from a creation perspective. And a Kyrie Hayward Wiggins threesome really does make a lot of sense in terms of spacing, in terms of the way in which they can all work off of each other. Deion Waiters was our secondary creator the past couple seasons. So I would imagine Hayward would take over that role and would also play a complementary spacing kind of role alongside Wiggins, who isn't a great shooter yet. But yeah, I would prefer Hayward over Chandler Parsons at that kind of deal. Just in terms of the upside long-term still. And you know he can create a little bit in spurts. And if you're paying him that kind of money, you're obviously also not going to have Deion Waiters, let alone Jared Jack and all the other point guards the Cavs still have. So you're going to use Hayward somewhat in that role and also to work off of the long-term future of Irving and Wiggins, who are here for at least another six seasons.
Yeah, in that sort of limited, the limited creator role, I think Hayward can be extremely valuable. I make the comparison to like a very light version of a Manu Ginobili when he was in his prime and not necessarily coming off the bench, not necessarily playing the exact type of role that Manu did, but he can do many things well, and occasionally when needed, he can create his own shot. That's not something you want him doing 10 or 12 times a game.
Yeah.
So I want
to change of pace.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a couple things that are tangentially related to the Jazz. First of all, the David Blatt hire. How are you guys feeling in Cleveland about that? Do you think, and what kind of offense do you think he's going to be implementing in Cleveland?
In Cleveland, we're just excited. It's not Mike Brown. think of two different coaches than Mike Brown, the defensive, Spursian kind of guy, and David Blatt, who's rumored to be this offensive genius. We've started to, Cavs fans have started to watch some of the tape and things like that. I know Coach Nick from Basketball Breakdown did a nice little thing about the kind of cuts and things like that Blatt ran over in Israel.
Yeah, I saw that.
So we're excited just about utilizing Kyrie Irving a little bit better, a little more effectively. We hope that the Cavs will add the shooters that David Blatt usually preferred. This past season, the Cavs were just horrendous shooting the ball and horrendous at stopping people on the wings. So from the emphasis of three-point shooting, we hope that Blatt would do the things that are necessary in the competitive NBA today. The Cavs have just been a mess the past several seasons. And from a watchability perspective, David Blatt's perhaps the most exciting option we could have ever thought of. Because you hope that the offense improves significantly. You hope that he utilizes Kyrie better. You hope that there are shooters to complement him. And, we in Cleveland are painfully optimistic at times and then really, really mad and angry after that. So at the moment, we're still in the optimistic kind of hopeful stage. And with Blatt's inexperience in the NBA, we don't really know what else could come next.
Right. I have another question, but I want to ask you, what happened with the Luol Deng thing last season, right? Because he seemed like a good fit in terms of being able to add that defensive wing presence that you talked about, and then it fell apart. He made no impact, it seemed. I mean, what happened kind of from an insider point of view?
He did make an impact from the perspective of we were like maybe 11 and 23 or something like that at the time of the trade, and we played 500 ball the rest of the season from there. So the Cavs were better when they added Luol Deng and Spencer Hawes. They were. I think fans often forget that. We were a much better team, especially offensively. David Griffin also was in charge. All those kind of things happened at once for the Cavs. Where I think the Cavs messed up with Luol Deng is they viewed him maybe as a shooter, and Luol Deng throughout his career has been a below average shooter. He is a good defensive presence, a good passer, a good guy slashing and finishing in the paint, but he's not a shooter. And I think at first the Cavs were using him as a spot up shooter, and that's not Luol Deng's role, and the fans kind of turned on him because of that, and they expected him to score 20 points a game and shoot 38% for three, and that's not him. Luol Deng did fine. Our small forwards the past 4 years have been horrendous. We've, since LeBron James, the guy with the second most minutes for the Cavs in the last 4 years is Lonzo G. And if that doesn't say what you need to say about the Cavs small forwards, then I'm not sure. But Deng was clearly an upgrade over G, clearly an upgrade over our three-point guard lineups we ran a lot this season. And so he was fine. And he deserves to get, you know, $10 to $12 million a year from some other team. I just don't think he necessarily fits what Blatt wants to do with shooters and spacing.
Makes sense. On that same topic of kind of the small forward rotation in Cleveland, C.J. Miles just signed a new deal with Indiana. Are you guys at all upset about losing him? C.J. was kind of a beloved son here in Utah, and we were sad to see him go. But, you know, what was Cleveland's point of view on him?
We like, you know, some of the folks in, like, the Cavs Twitter sphere aren't the biggest fans of C.J. Miles. But there's no doubt he was our best shooter the last two seasons. We have very few other shooters like him. He shot very well for us compared to his Utah numbers. We didn't really know what to expect when he signed him 2 years ago, just a small, you know, $2 million a year kind of deal. And this year, this past season, wasn't even guaranteed. We, you know, had that option to just cut him if we wanted to at any point in time this last summer. So C.J. Miles was great for us. It's a decent amount of money that Indiana gave him, so I think there might be a little bit of, you know, consternation among people of C.J. Miles is really worth $4.5 million. Can you find bench shooters that are cheaper? But I really enjoyed C.J. from the perspective of he was a streaky shooter, and the Cavs had no shooters at all. And we played really well with him on the court this season. Him and Kyrie worked well together. He was pretty good for us last year. So I really enjoyed C.J. Miles. He was also perhaps the best guy in the locker room. The media spoke always highly of C.J. He was well-respected. Of all the chaos that happened at the Cavs this year, there was never a bad word ever said about C.J. Miles. So I'm a fan. And Indiana, he also makes sense for a bench shooter perspective.
It's going to be a very similar role, you have to assume. There, I mean, their shooting was just god-awful last year.
Now, the bench is just terrible.
Oh, man, goodness. It was horrible. Very hard to watch, honestly. But you mentioned Waiters briefly, and you also mentioned David Blatt and sort of the new type of culture. And you were just mentioning also C.J. Miles as a locker room type of guy. And even if a Hayward thing were to not come to fruition, if they were to decide that they were, you know, a little reticent about offering the deal because they're sure the Jazz are going to match, anything like that, do you think Waiters is still a part of the long-term future there, or with the things that started happening this year, are things starting to maybe trend in another direction for that? I know Cleveland fans' opinions can be very divisive. Is there a general opinion on that, or are feelings still very mixed?
Feelings are mixed, for sure. When we drafted Wiggins, the initial, you know, you've got Kyrie, Deion, and Wiggins, that's your three guards. That's your starting lineup in a sense. That's who you're going to build around for the future with all of them being pretty young. And then at the post-draft press conference, Dave Griffin, the GM, went out and specifically called Wiggins a big two guard, saying that if he's going to do well in the league, he's going to do so as a dominant big two guard. He's a big guy with lankiness. And so after that, the Cavs fans were like, where's Deion Waiters sit in that equation? Yeah. Deion has like a combo guard kind of perspective who can create, but also, if he's going to be successful on Kyrie Irving, it would be as a two guard, essentially. So as of now, we kind of think Deion's gone regardless. The Cavs will add shooters. They might go after Hayward. They might go after somebody else. I'm not sure. But we kind of think Deion's just on the way out from the investment we have in Kyrie, the hope to get more shooters and the investment we have in Wiggins. So I'm not sure, there have been, talks of maybe if things worked out that way, a sign-and-trade to Utah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, you guys certainly have a glut of guards as well with Exum and Burke long-term, so I'm not sure if you would be interested in Deion Waiters, but I guess the Cavs are probably saying that to every team in the NBA right now.
I wouldn't personally, but that's just
I don't know why you would.
And I think that honestly, and this might be why he could end up, at least one reason why he could end up not being a part of the long term future with you guys is I'm not sure how well he fits into the sort of style that I think Blatt's going to be trying to play. We talk about that video from Coach Nick about with all the amazing cuts and things like that, and he's probably not going to take it to that level in the NBA. But Waiters is a ball stopper, and the Jazz are going to have a very similar types of things. They're going to very likely have some motion offense coming in and things like that with Quinn Snyder, and it's hard to say whether a player like that really fits into that sort of long term philosophy. And it might be the same in Cleveland.
I'm not 100% certain yet. If Kyrie, Deion, and Wiggins were your three guys you're going to invest in, I think Black could make it work. I think Deion and Kyrie would share ball handling responsibilities primarily. Wiggins isn't really there yet in his career, so it could work theoretically if Deion is splitting still some of the primary duties with Kyrie. But as of just now, from the way the Cavs are off, been talking about it, I don't see him coming back.
Yeah, it sounds doubtful. Anyway, Jokic, thank you again for joining us. It's always great to have another perspective from around the league. And I really appreciate, you joining us on the show today.
Absolutely, guys. You guys are some really bright dudes, and appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for inviting me along.
Thanks a lot, Jacob. Jacob Rosen, again, for those of you who have not seen, definitely check out Waiting for Next Year, especially if you have any sort of Cleveland sports interest whatsoever.
No, but check out the Sports Analytics blog.
Sports Analytics blog is great. It's honestly one of my favorite resources online for all sports. You know, I was asking them yesterday for some really good soccer follows on Twitter for the World Cup to get me updated and informed, and link me straight to a big article that's got 25 names in it that I can follow for soccer. It's a really great resource.
Yeah, Soccer Analytics is one of those fields that's actually growing and is pretty interesting right now. They were the first people to actually have SportView-esque technology, mm-hmm. because there aren't really any other stats that are statistically significant in soccer because there are just so few goals. But anyway, that's another topic here that won't be discussed on the Salt City Hoops show.
As fun as it would be.
Okay, maybe one day. During the off season, not during
in August,
time,
like in August, like we can do it.
August, September. I think it's interesting that Cleveland thinks Andrew Wiggins is a big two guard. To me, that's ridiculous. Like, he has gigantic. He obviously has the size to play the small forward position, right? He'd be one of the bigger small forwards in the league, quite frankly, probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't his skill set match that position better than it does the two guard? To me, that seems a lot like when PJ Colosimo thought Kevin Durant was a big two guard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just because a guy can shoot and, I guess, take people off the dribble doesn't mean that the two is the best position for him.
Which we're not even 100% sure he can do either of those things at an NBA level. In general, I'd agree. And also, that would sort of tug at my general feelings that, especially if you're going to be playing a more European-style system like they might be looking to with a David Blatt, where with a lot of movement and things like that, I find it less important which exact designation your wing players receive. And that's another thing I wrote again in the XM piece I did yesterday, is I'm not sure how important that is anymore necessarily.
And of course,
context is everything in that kind of a discussion, because you can't just put like three guys that could play small forward as your three wings and call it good.
Right, but I think that makes more of a difference on defense than it does on offense.
Definitely.
Right? Who Wiggins ends up guarding. And if he guards two guards, in the Deion Waiters, Alec Burks mold, I think that may be underutilizing him a little bit. I think it may make sense to put him on the bigger guys.
Yeah, you would hope that they would be flexible in that regard because he projects to be at least a two-position guy in terms of being able to guard, if not three-position. There should be, as he bulks up a little, there should be some fours that he can even not, his length will help him out with and things like that. You would hope that they're, defensively, that they're not going to sort of bottle him up into just one designation there.
That's true. Okay, so I want to get into the Lance Stephenson thing. Because you grimaced when I even mentioned the name.
Jen, I'm just going to say up front, I don't like Lance Stephenson as a player, as a human. I just don't like it. But anyway.
No, okay. So here's the thing. In my view, he put up similar production to Gordon Hayward last season. Less usage, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's that kind of all-around player that brought a lot to Indiana last season. And by a lot of metrics, by the way, he had a better season than Gordon Hayward did last season. So
efficiency-wise.
And in terms of, would you rather, I guess I'm looking at it this way. Would you rather pay Lance Stephenson $9 million a year or Gordon Hayward 15?
I thought you were going to say like 11 or 12.
And well, I guess he turned Stephenson. Down a five-year, $44 million offer from Indiana.
Yeah.
That being said, the market is reportedly tight for Lance Stephenson. Yeah. No one really wants to take on those antics. But if a team is willing to, then maybe they're getting a good value in free agency when players like Ben Gordon are getting 4.5 and Gordon Hayward's getting 15. Maybe instead of overpaying in free agency, maybe you have an asset.
That's none of what you're saying is impossible, of course. And if you really believe, if you do your interviews and your due diligence with someone like Lance, and you truly believe that the coaching staff you've brought on board here is stable enough and the culture here is stable enough that Lance is not going to be someone who causes problem, because honestly, if something like, and I know that the Jazz haven't been in a high-pressure situation like a conference finals like Indiana was this last year, they haven't been in that position for a while, but if, down the line, an issue like that, just the stuff he was doing in this year's conference finals and the distraction that that caused for Indiana as a team, things like that just are not going to fly in a place like Utah. It's just not going to work.
What do you mean the stuff he was doing, off the court or on the court?
Both. The things he was, the things he just insisted on saying to the media, literally despite his teammates two lockers over being like, this guy should shut up. Like, he just kept doing it, antagonizing LeBron. I mean, did people not learn after a while to stop antagonizing Jordan? Like, that happened at a certain point. Even Reggie Miller stopped.
Hey, Deshaun Stevenson won the Stevenson-LeBron battle.
Yeah, and it, you know, I just, okay, so again, if you truly believe that you can clamp down on that stuff, that you can make Lance a team player and someone who really only wants the success of his team and doesn't get emotional in these high pressure moments and start to damage his team, then you could have an argument that paying him $9 million a year, if he can show the same sort of versatility and efficiency that he did last year, and especially if he can continue towards 40% from 3-point range being a consistent thing there, then yeah, you could have a conversation about whether he's more valuable at $6 million less a year than a Gordon Hayward would be. I'm just thoroughly unconvinced that is a possibility.
No, I think that's fair. And I honestly am throwing this out there kind of, again, as a devil's advocate slash to troll. But I think it's a reasonable discussion to say, what is the value of team chemistry and what is the value of keeping a system in place? And, you know, the Jazz are, by all accounts, one of the teams in the NBA that cares most about that team chemistry and cares most about the Jazz system and the Jazz way of being, if you will. So, you know, Lance isn't really an option for the Jazz in actuality. But, you know, as kind of a intellectual exercise, how do I maximize this cap space to get me the best team possible? I think it's an interesting question for some team out there to take on.
Absolutely. And that sort of thing, that sort of maybe a little bit outside the box type of thinking, really does, when it's done correctly and when you're sort of kicking the tires on lots of those types of things, you're going to eventually find some moves that are going to, you know, that are going to be real wins for your team, that are taking advantage of little, not loopholes, but advantageous situations where you might be able to find some added value where other teams aren't going to see it. And that's a potential for that sort of thing, but the risk, as we're saying, is very, very high. And for a franchise like Utah that cares so much about that sort of stuff, it's always going to be tough. If I could get him for 3 years and with a team option on the fourth or something like that, but I find it unlikely that he's going to sign a deal like that, if not impossible that he's going to sign a deal like that. But I guess if you could, and I wouldn't even consider going much over that nine figure that you cited in terms of a per year thing, that very, very unlikely that I would look at it. It wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't kick the tires on anything. That's always my opinion, is that, it, you know, as long as you're not signing the dotted line at the bottom of anything, what's wrong with looking at things? And I think Dennis Lindsay is the type of GM who does that in a variety of circumstances.
So let me ask you before I move on to the crazy trade idea of the week. If the Jazz decide not to go with Hayward, let's say he gets a max deal and they just decide too rich for my blood, where, you know, what's the next step? Who would you look at in terms of kind of a replacement?
I would look at Parsons, although I do think they have a bit of a wink-wink deal going on over there in Houston, and I don't think there's really much chance that he signs an offer sheet with somebody else.
Oh, I think so, too. And maybe the only chance you get him is, again, signing a max deal.
Maybe.
And maybe then Houston says no.
Yeah, it's like, and of course, if he is on the market, there are going to be a lot of teams interested. The Jazz are going to be far from the only one, and you're probably right. They probably do have to overpay, and I probably agree overall with Jacob. I would take Hayward over Parsons, especially if it's the same money. If you could get Parsons for 12, where you get Hayward for 15, then it becomes a little bit of a closer argument. Especially since Parsons had a better year shooting last year than Hayward did. But again, we're not paying for last year. You're paying for the future years. And as Jacob says, in the seasons where they were both playing the same sort of complementary role, Hayward's shooting numbers were better. So I that's somebody I would look at. I guess you'd have to kick the tires on a Lance. PJ Tucker, I don't remember. Was he unrestricted or restricted?
I don't know.
I think he's restricted.
I like the PJ Tucker option. I mean, you kind of wonder if his last season was a fluke with Phoenix, but, you know, he put up really good production as a starter there for Phoenix and, you know, was a big part of their growth last season and surprising growth. I also think maybe you look at Trevor Ariza, although that's kind of, you worry about the contract year sort of thing.
Yeah, and he's going to have a hefty price. He's one of those guys that I'm not. But if he goes elsewhere, which again I think is super not very likely, he's probably going back to Washington. I see that absolutely. You look at the couple of years before his contract year last year where he was playing in a very similar situation. He, you know, that was there's a very good chance that that was an aberration. You do see contract years from guys happen from now and then, and I wouldn't be looking to if, with the price tag that he's sure to carry, I probably wouldn't be looking at him. One option that you would have that I'll just toss out there briefly is that, and this is of course as always relates back to my insane love for Alec Burks, is do you necessarily have to immediately fill a two guard position or, you know, a wing position if you don't match on Gordon Hayward this summer?
Well, you need someone to back up that spot at least.
You
right?
do.
You need someone who could play at least 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Either, you know, maybe spread between the two and the three. But, you know, Burke, Exum, and Burks is not enough.
No. But what I'm saying is, could you maybe look at a less hefty price tag type of guy, maybe more of a veteran? Maybe you try. I'm not thinking of a specific player off the top of my head, but, and then. Maybe you can give a look to he's probably in a vacuum going to be too expensive, but like a Spencer Hawes or a Channing Frye's very likely going back, I think, but or maybe going to be too expensive. But guys like him, maybe look to increase your shooting from the big spots, since the Jazz are, you know, Cantor can shoot, but other than that, they're a little bit weak in that area in terms of guys that can stretch the floor from the big positions. Maybe you could look there. I think it might open up a little bit of flexibility. Although again, that's I think they're going to match Hayward, and I think we're in agreement on that.
Yeah, no, I think they will too, and I think that's probably the right move in the end. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the discussion's fun, and I do think that even if they do resign Hayward, they may need a backup there, or you need some sort of guy to take up minutes or be able to step in if somebody gets hurt.
And the one thing I will
something we forget about sometimes.
Yeah, the one thing I did want to say really briefly, and it's not directly, it is related to the Hayward thing, is that I tire of seeing this is just me making a little Ben statement. I get a little tired of seeing, like, yeah, okay, Mark Stein reported that the Jazz could have potentially had Hayward for 4 years, 52, last offseason, right, before he became a restricted free agent. Cool. Whether that's correct or not, cool. They didn't. It's the future now. Like, it's now. That's the past. And I understand you can critique, and if they do end up matching a max deal for him, that, and they really could have had him for 4 years, 52 back then sure, that doesn't look awesome. That, you know, they paid more than they had to. They could have done it differently. But, you know, there are way more, you can't see the future. And there were way more things at play back then. If it was a small decision that cost you a few million, so what, man? It's now. Let's talk about now, and let's, you know.
No, okay. So I actually kind of disagree on this. I think it's interesting that if the Jazz could have gotten Hayward, you know, outright with 4-4-52, that they turned that down. And I think you have to look at, you know, whether or not that was a smart decision.
I agree.
I agree that, like, we shouldn't yell at the front office. You know, it's not the biggest deal in the world for them to spend an extra, say, $10 million over the next four seasons. It's not. You know, it's a Jeremy Evans here. You know, it doesn't matter that much. But I think it's interesting in terms of how the front office thinks. I think that there are bigger and more important moves that make clearer what's going on in the front office head, you know, moving forward. So, I mean, the one that always strikes me as weird is the fact that the Jazz didn't at all tried to resign Kyle Korver. Those sort of moves, I think, are the sort of things that you look at a front office and maybe worry about what their decision-making process is. You know, whether or not they spend 13 or 15 on Gordon Hayward in the end doesn't matter that much, right?
Yeah. If looking at it from that standpoint of analyzing the mindset of a front office and analyzing the direction and of course you can go into specific decisions, and especially when you're looking at trends and things that have happened over a period of multiple years. But I'm taking a petty little stand against, you know, I'm tired of seeing that on my Twitter timeline.
Yeah,
I'm tired of seeing, like, oh boy, sure would have been cool if they had taken that 4 years, 52 last year. Like, yeah, we get it.
Sarcasm.
Like, we get it. And yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And with regards to the Kyle Korver point, I should make clear that that was like a totally different front office in terms of who was actually in charge and blah, 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 blah. But I think that there are much bigger issues to care about than whether or not Hayward gets 13 or 15. Like the fact, for example, that we just got Dante Exum is a far bigger deal than whatever
it
happens
is.
With Hayward.
It is. That's why I wanted to write about him and take a little of the focus off the free agency thing, which I don't know if people have noticed. I really enjoy doing that. I enjoy, or it just seems to happen. I don't know if I enjoy doing it or it just happens. Like, I write about things and then something huge breaks the day it comes out, and like, no matter what. Yeah, that's
and
happened.
It's like, no, Ben's talking about Dante Exum. Yeah. No, and I really liked your piece yesterday on it, too. I liked what you had to add there. Okay, but I want to get to the crazy trade idea of the week before we sign out. And it actually has something to do with a topic we just discussed in terms of getting shooting at the big man position. So the other we also have a lot of cap space, the Utah Jazz do. Mm-hmm. So I think that this trade kind of makes sense in the same way that it did last season. The idea is that Jazz will trade the 2016 Memphis second that they just received in the Jarnell Stokes deal for the number 35 pick, and will receive Donatas Montiejunas. I believe he was picked 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago sounds right.
Basically a big man who can shoot from outside, hit a lot of corner threes last season. And Jeremy Lin's contract, which is on the cap for $8.5 million. Basically, the idea is Houston gets a lot of cap space to go after their free agency targets. The Jazz get a big man who can shoot in Montiejunas. Jeremy Lin, who is a good player, can soak up a lot of minutes, would bring a lot of attention and marketing into Utah and, make the Jazz a little bit of a better team. What do you think?
I like it, and the Jazz are absolutely going to be one of the potential destinations should Houston, receive some types of commitment from a bigger player that they need that cap space from Lin. We've all seen the stuff happening yesterday with like they dissed him or whatever with putting the photoshopped Carmelo picture wearing number 7, which is actually Lin's number, and
right.
We spent the whole day debating whether or not his people had knowledge of that beforehand, which is extremely vital, of course, and. I do think that in that potential type of a scenario where the Jazz, they match a Hayward offer this year and or end up making one of their own. By the way, the one thing I didn't mention, I'm really hoping the Jazz might make their own offer and get him for 5 years, $12 million a year, and say, hey, you're still getting the same amount of guaranteed money anyway, just over more years. I don't know if it's likely.
You're so angrily sarcastic right now.
No,
I love
I know.
This.
Sorry. But in a situation where something like that happened, but they didn't make any more major moves and they still had a good amount of cap space sitting there, they're not going to want to be below the cap floor and just have to pay everybody extra money. And that's a way that they could use up some of that extra cap is eating a contract from a team that needed to throw off some salary like they did last year with the Golden State deals to net themselves a couple extra picks, one of which turned into Rodney Hood. Could end up being a very good move there if Rodney Hood's a good player. And, yeah, I don't mind those types of things. His contract comes off the year after that. It would be a few more bucks for the Jazz to pay. I'm not looking at the number right in front of me, but they would have to – his cap hit is like $8 million, but I think the actual number they're paying him would be – wouldn't it be significantly more, like
right,
$13 million or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, $13 or $14
So the Jazz would have a few extra bucks to shell out, and we'd have to make sure that everybody was cool with that. But, I think it'd be a nice move, and it would space things a little bit, and it would allow the Jazz at least the Montiejunas wouldn't stay on the roster for two – how many – I think he has either 1 or 2 years left, right? And so he wouldn't be necessarily a long-term piece unless he really, made a leap and you wanted him to be. But he would – give the Jazz, give the team and the coaching staff a chance to see what this roster could look like with a bit of spacing from the big spots. So if they're, down the line, if some, in next year's draft, if there's a Kristaps Porzingis in the draft that the Jazz might look at, who they better if
there will
there.
Be.
As a guy that projects that could be a floor spacer from the 5 spot or anybody like that, where they could at least have a view of what it is and they could do some positive things for themselves. And I think this sort of trade, it's not too crazy, honestly. We could very well see a thing like that happen.
No, and in fact, so this is from the Real GM trade boards, which is, the best source in terms of actual rumors that could actually happen. But Houston fans actually think that's maybe not enough in terms of what the Jazz are going to be receiving, just the prospect of Montiejunas. Maybe they need to get another first-round pick in that deal. Maybe they need to send in $1.5 or $3 million in cash as well to kind of subsidize the Jeremy Lin extra money. They think that prospect is not enough for just taking on that, $15 million of payments that the Jazz will actually have to make. Maybe if you can get another first-round pick in there, great. Then you have another prospect in next year's draft.
That'd be awesome. I mean, good luck getting that out of Morey, but if you could, that'd be great.
Hey, if Houston fans are saying, hey, go ahead and take our first-round picks for next year, maybe it could actually happen.
It's true. It could. And you know, that I would... Boy, that would be, if they could actually get a first round pick out of that, that would be, but at the same time, you look at it and it's from the Jazz's angle, you can say, hey, we're facilitating your, because in this type of situation, you're assuming that they're probably getting a, maybe not Carmelo, but they're getting somebody, right?
Right.
And if that's happening, it's like, guys, we're facilitating you becoming a superpower in this league. We're facilitating your third superstar. It's going to cost you. Like,
right,
we know what this move is for. This isn't a move in a vacuum. Everybody knows what you're doing it for. And that there's an extra cost attached to that sort of thing.
And actually, as a side note, that was one of the big issues in last year's Golden State deal is whether or not they were going to be using that for Andre Iguodala, or a lot of people thought it was going to be for Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. So, that actually changed the nature of those discussions in terms of how much the Jazz could expect to receive based on who they were getting. Anyway, we're out of time on today's show. Thanks again for Jacob Rosen for joining us today. A great follow on Twitter. It's Jacob WFNY waiting for next year. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Andy B. Larson, you on Twitter at Ben_Dowsett. Follow us at saltcityhoops.com for all the latest Jazz news and analysis. This is Andy Larson signing out.